other tributi moving about their duties, but Gelsa could not see any tech priests nearby. Harkus slipped a ring onto his left hand, a golden band with what Gelsa first took to be a ruby, but then realized was a focusing crystal for a laser.
"You have a digi-weapon?"
His glare warned her that she had spoken loudly. She glanced around nervously, trying to hide him behind her bulk. Nobody seemed to have heard among the constant clanking of the Titan's motion. She dropped her voice to a whisper.
"What are you going to do with that? Why didn't you use it on the Hyperesia?"
"To answer your second question first, I had to hide it to prevent confiscation," he said, as they mounted a short flight of steps to a curving gantry around the central mass of the Titan's main power conduits. "And you know the answer to the other question." She stopped, blocking the Inquisitor at the top of the stairs.
"You can't kill the Hyperesia," she said, remembering to keep her voice low, despite a fresh surge of apprehension. "They're not heretics. They're just doing what the tech priests order them to do."
"You had no compunction when you struck them to rescue me."
"I wasn't trying to kill them, and I wasn't really thinking about it."
"If I fail, hundreds of thousands of the Emperor's servants will be lost."
Harkus moved to step around Gelsa, but she barred his route.
"This is an awkward time to have a moral quandary, Gelsa Vinjaint. When the plot has been thwarted, I will happily debate you on the subject of life's value."
"And what about me? Am I expendable too?"
The Inquisitor met her gaze and replied without hesitation.
"Yes."
He pushed past, but then stopped and looked back at her. His expression softened slightly.
"These are the decisions I weigh every day, Gelsa. I need you to trust me."
Trust was earned, as far as Gelsa was concerned, and Harkus had done little to deserve any so far. She wasn't even convinced his name was Ossisiru Harkus. Even so, she had chosen to help him, and was committed to that decision. A deafening reverberation drowned out all thought. The bass vibrations rattled Gelsa's teeth and had Harkus wincing. It lasted several seconds, echoing back and forth across the conjoined decks, until it felt as if the monstrous noise had always existed.
"War siren!"
Gelsa gasped when the last echoes had eventually passed. Part warning to the crew, part challenge to the enemy, the Casus Belli's mechanical roar signaled imminent conflict. The deck space was lit by a red haze as power relays burst into life. Pattering feet thrummed across the interior and tributi pushed past them, work gangs dashing to their final battle stations. The heat increased dramatically as the reactor courses flushed with power, clouds of steam rising through the decks, followed by bursts of coolant leaking from ancient pipes.
"This is our chance," said Harkus, heading along the walkway. "We can get to the Acropolis while everyone else is occupied with the battle."
Gelsa nodded, and they broke into a run, joining the flow of laborers and tech priests moving through the innards of the Emperor Titan. Nobody gave them a second glance, and they reached the stairway up to the Octuaz deck without incident.
"Tributi!"
The mechanical bark halted Gelsa with her foot on the bottom step. She turned and met the lensed stare of a tech priest. The Neocora of the Machine God was swathed in a white robe with a sash of black about the waist. No flesh was visible, the face a mask of tubes and angled metal, serrated claws nestled within voluminous sleeves. Green vapor puffed from a valve atop a cylinder jutting from the tech priest's back, each artificial exhalation accompanied by an acrid smell. Out of the corner of her eye, she saw Harkus flexing his arm, perhaps readying his digi-laser. She stepped in front of the Inquisitor and bowed to the tech priest, signaling behind her back for Harkus to do the same. With her eyes averted downwards, all she could see was the hem of the robe dragging on the decking, edged with frayed threads and stained from continuous contact.
"Accompany me,"
commanded the tech priest. The Neocora turned away with no further explanation. Gelsa straightened, and Harkus caught her eye, twitching his head towards the step to suggest that they should flee. She shook her head, and he responded with a deep frown.
"Tardiness is a weakness,"
intoned the tech priest without looking around.
The walkway was almost deserted now, all crew at their positions.
A pair of epileptos withdrew to make way for the tech priest. Grabbing Harkus's wrist, careful not to crush bone, Gelser started after the machine near Cora and pulled him along with her. They followed closely, the tech priest's presence acting as a form of camouflage, masking them from scrutiny. The Neocora led them to a conveyor near the port galleries, the latticework door wheezing open in response to a silently transmitted cipher. Though far better than the chain lift with which Gelser was much more familiar, the elevator was by no means large, its cage ceiling forcing her to hunch to avoid banging her head. The door slammed shut, and the tech priest reached out a clawed hand to grasp a lever. It pulled the control, and an engine coughed into life in the base of the conveyor. Gelser's heart sank along with the cage, as it rattled back into the lower reaches of the down decks. Chapter 4. Striking Back. Enemy fire lashed into the Casus Belli's shields from the smallest flicker to sheets of explosive energy that cascaded across the hemisphere of Azure power. With each blast, a surge of digital information scattered across the noosphere to be analyzed and archived. Exasus monitored this activity with a mechanical detachment, but could not halt a flurry of more organic feelings emanating from the Princeps Senioris and the machine spirit of the Imperator. Though the shields held against any physical damage, it seemed as though the Casus Belli waded into the fury of a raging torrent. Within the bowels of the machine, void shield generators overloaded as they took the brunt of the enemy attack, while motive engines struggled against the steepening ground. Exasus registered the strain of the immense war engine as a series of negative modifiers acting as a drag on viscogitations. Despite all that was thrown against them, the battle group prevailed. Plasma blasts and searing lasbeams eradicated tank squadrons and reduced super-heavy Titan hunters to steaming slag piles. A hail of shells and rockets slammed into the walls of Az-Kallak, cracking buttressed ferrocrete, tumbling support towers, buckling turrets. Since Steel Wolf's demise, another Reaver, the labor of battle, and a warlord called the Phlegmatics had been lost to the full brunt of the enemy's power. But the Titans of the Legio Metallica pressed on without relent. The command that Az-Kallak had to fall was not just a military necessity. It was seared into the souls of the god machines, and through them, the Princeps and their crews. By Exasus's estimates, the enemy dead from this engagement alone numbered more than 10,000, and 4 or 5 times that number would be lost by the time the Citadel was breached. It was not an inconsiderable amount of casualties, but while the exchange of 5 Titans, 2 of which were recoverable, seemed quite a high price to pay, with a kill efficiency in the region of 89%, the battle could be deemed a success. In fact, the Magos' estimates had expected the battle group's kill efficiency to be around the 75% mark, far lower than they had achieved. With the terrain, the prepared defenses, and the commitment of anti-Titan war engines, as well as the orbital strikes that had rained down until the battle group had moved into range of the Citadel, the fighting should have been harder. While it was possible that more casualties would be suffered by the Legio Metallica in the final conquest of Az-Kallak, it seemed unlikely. The enemy had failed to concentrate their fire effectively against the Titans, and hence had been unable to inflict substantial damage on those that were still mobile. Exasus, Direct Trans, Mondaras.
The enemy are presenting a dichotomy. The planning behind the combined commitment of the anti-Titan reinforcements and orbital attack shows a high degree of discipline, patience, and communication. Conversely, on commencement of the counterattack, target prioritization and persistence of effort have been lacking. I have calculated that had the enemy desired it, they could have posed a considerable threat to the Casus Belli, but they have been distracted and diffuse in their efforts.
Mondaras.
Then we are to be thankful for their lack.
Exasus.
No. We must not allow complacency to undermine our efforts. This deficiency is uncharacteristic of their battle effectiveness thus far. We have seen from their use of super-heavy vehicles that they have access to Adeptus Mechanicus facilities, and a number of the Syntacharxes of Nicomedua have clearly defected to the cause of the rebellion. These heretics conduct the same logistarius and strategos cogitation rites that we do. They will know that their defense is ineffective.
Mondras.
Since the battle began, you have pondered and surmised and speculated, but you have offered no guiding course of action, nor contributed anything meaningful to the conduct of the casus belli. Your idleness, without commitment to engagement with your Scitarii, has caused you to overly indulge in prognostication of matters beyond mathematical foresight. You are experiencing data paranoia, Magos.
The abruptness with which Mondras severed the link sent a flash of corrosive feedback along Exasus's neospheric processes. V had hoped that V's fellow tech priest would have been more open to discussion than the Moderati, but it was impossible to ignore the conclusion that Exasus had also vexed the Logistarius. It was a sobering thought, and Exasus felt it necessary to give due credence to Mondras's assertion. Was it possible that V was overanalyzing the data? Could such a thing actually be possible? Data paranoia was far more prevalent among battle priests, that was true, but more as a mark of continual combat fatigue on circuitry and cogitation routines. Exasus had been in the privileged position of command within the Imperator for several decades, and hence at a slight remove from persistent battle. Only rarely did V need to venture from the confines of the command module, even when committing V's troops into direct conflict. Haley.
Targeting error! An enemy Baneblade is beneath my depression extent! No firing solution.
Razdia.
No firing solution for the hellstorm.
Exasus's interest spiked, and in response, alerts threaded from Vis cerebellum implants to the squad commanders of Vis Scutari, increasing their readiness. If the Baneblade was able to drive within the scope of the void shields, it could cause considerable damage directly against the casus belli, perhaps even breaking the armor around the reactor or damaging one of the primary weapons. With a thought broadcast, V tasked several heavy weapon squads to prepare to dismount. Mondras.
Point defense weapons will be ineffective against a super-heavy engine, Princeps Senioris.
The casus belli slowed. Before it was fully halted, the Imperator started to turn backwards while Razdia tried to bring the Hellstorm cannon to bear on the approaching Baneblade. Several squads of renegades in camouflaged armor advanced around the behemoth, perhaps thinking to storm one of the leg bastions. They flowed through the ruins like insects from a broken nest, but their potential bite was enough to cause the Magos Dominus to dedicate a sliver of cogitation to their defeat. Exasus increased the intensity of his alert status to imminent action. His sensory connectors vibrated with feedback from the limbic systems of Viscatari warriors, allowing Ver to sense their agitation, though V did not biologically share it. Gevran.
Clearing support, infantry.
Bolters erupted into life from across the Imperator's bastion legs and lower body, the equivalent of several squads of troops opening fire. The volleys scythed hundreds of mass reactive rounds into the armored traitors. Detonations cracked open protective plates and ripped the flesh within, gouging ragged lines through the packed squads. Mondras.
Enemy Baneblade is passing void shield boundary.
The tremor of its passage and proximity warnings shuddered through Exasus's motor systems, as though the invasion were into his own body. Corresponding ripples of negatives clattered through the ongoing algorithms of his cogitating engine. Exasus.
Second and fourth platoons standing ready to depart.
Iolona.
Do not disembark your troops, Dominus. Remain on board the bastions.
Casus Belli's weight shifted dramatically as the Princeps Senioris lifted the left leg. Several unattached servitors toppled against their stations, and Exasus's grip claws scraped over the decking until they found purchase. The Imperator pivoted at the hip joint, and the building-sized leg swung forward. With equally sudden movement, the foot descended, slamming directly on top of the Baneblade. The turret crumpled under the initial impact, and a shell within the breach of its battle cannon exploded, engulfing the foot of the Imperator with dark flame. Dozens more detonations followed from its ammunition store as Iliona pushed the Titan forward, transferring more and more weight onto the super-heavy tank.
Severed tracks flailed out, their snaking ends lashing through the infantry who had survived the blasts. Exassus registered the resistance of the Baneblade's carcass as it ground into the hard earth, though Viz's experience was nothing like that of the Princeps Senioris, sharing the casus belli's spirit through the MIU. Scattered remnants of enemy squads fled the carnage, many of them cut down by fresh fusillades from the bolters. A near physical ache worried at Exassus from Viz's desire to deploy Viz's troops, but the threat had been neutralized. In their stations aboard the bastions, the Skatari squads stood down, returning to their carriage positions with a mixture of relief and dissatisfaction. Aggressor calculations stopped mid-process, cycling down into dormancy, like a numerical sigh of disappointment. Gelsa disembarked into a buzz of electrical discharge and a chorus of shouting, the air alive with static that danced off her skin. The ruddy light was cut through with occasional bright flashes, and in these moments of violent illumination, she saw dozens of tributi thronging the deck. Four huge void shield generators dominated the space, the groan of warp cores adding to the background noise. Flares of power leapt from venting coils to earth through spinning conducted lobes. The tech priest stepped out of the cage and gestured to the right, signaling for them to join a work team gathered around one of the generators. Sparks flew from a broken cable in a hissing blue cascade. Gelsa moved to the front of the cage, but Harkus intercepted her.
"Wait," he said, barely audible above the din. "We can use the elevator to reach the Acropolis."
"That's an overload void shield generator," she replied, gesturing with the multi-tool.
She pointed into the space between decks to more energy-wreathed chambers below. A swarm of figures labored to keep the enormous machines operating.
"And there are eight more down there. Only three are left. When they are all down, the trouble really begins."
"I had not realized the fighting had started," said Harkus.
He moved out onto the walkway, making space for Gelsa.
"That's the point of void shields, isn't it? What did you think the war siren was for?"
Not waiting for an answer, she jogged along the metal walkway to the struggling generator crew, Harkus keeping close behind. A tech priest had an extended mechanical tentacle attached to an input socket, its attention intent upon its work. A half-dozen tributi were trying to lift a heavy cable into place to divert more power from the plasma reactor, while three more struggled with a chain pulley to reposition a buckled piece of magnetic shielding. A sudden flash erupted from the spinning discs at the heart of the machine, throwing out coruscating red waves. A piercing, inhuman shriek erupted from the tech priest. The Neocora stumbled back, articulated mechadendrites thrashing, while arcs of errant power danced across metal augmentations. Whining loudly, the tech priest collapsed, oily smoke leaking from beneath its hood. With panicked cries, two of the tributi let go of the cable and jumped away. Gelsa leapt forward, stooping under the cable before it could crush the remaining laborers, taking the weight across her shoulders. Teeth gritted, she glared at Harkus.
"Grab hold!" she snarled.
Her stare fell upon the timid Duluz.
"You as well!"
Together they manhandled the cable end into position beside the secondary socket, stepping over the tech priest's twitching corpse.
"Hold it there!" she said,
stepping back to ready the multi-tool. Its jaw whirred open, and she set it upon the fitting, her legs braced. At her nod, the work team thrust the cable into position, and she tightened the link with three quick turns. Almost immediately, the generator's wild growling became a more sedate buzz, and the arcs of power flickered away. Gelsa gave the connector one more turn for good measure, and then touched the tip of her multi-tool to her brow badge.
"Our thanks to the all-powerful Machine God for providing these engines to guard us from harm."
Without thought, she reached into a pouch at her belt, her fingers dipping into the small jar within. Her hand glistening with blessed oil, she raised it to the cable and drew the liquid across it.
"Praise the Omnissiah."
"Praise the Omnissiah," echoed the tributi.
"You,"
Gelsa thrust a finger at one of the others,
"fetch a tech priest. The connection needs proper consecration, or it will fail again."
The Deleuze scurried away, calling for one of the priesthood. Gelser saw Harkus heading back towards the open door of the conveyor and caught up with long strides.
"You'll not make it on your own. You said it yourself," she said.
"I don't have time for this," Harkus replied, shaking his head. Fresh shouts and a flurry of strobing blue light announced another near failure across the deck.
"We're taking a pounding," Gelser said. "You can't feel it, but to lose that many generators so quickly... This is serious. I've not seen anything like it since Acheron Hive on Armageddon."
"Have you been told nothing of your mission?"
"Enough. The battle group was deployed to destroy a traitor stronghold." Gelser shrugged. "No enemy war engines are expected. I'm surprised the fighting has lasted this long already, with the whole battle group deployed."
The Inquisitor rubbed at an earlobe, dried blood flaking from his fingers. "There was supposed to be minimal opposition. It seems the strategos were wrong." She looked again at the failing generators.
"Your mission won't count for much if the Casus Belli is destroyed."
"Better that than it being handed to the traitors."
"We'll all die."
Harkus shrugged, as emotionless as a half-machine servitor.
"No, not while I can do something about it," Gelser declared.
"Listen to me." It seemed that Harkus barely raised his voice, but there was something in his tone that cut through the cacophony of the generators and their attendants. He fixed his disturbing stare on Gelser, keeping her in place more surely than if she had been welded to the decking. Though his eyes were only level with her chin, in that moment it felt as though he towered above her. "If I fail, they will all die anyway, or worse." Foreboding knotted her gut at those last two words. She knew she was not an imaginative person, but enough whispered tales abounded to paint a vivid picture of the practices of the Dark Mechanicus. She shivered at the thought of what sort of monstrosity the Casus Belli might become if taken from the light of the machine god. With a last look at the tributi, she followed Harkus back into the conveyor cage. He slammed the door shut behind them, and pushed the lever to the ascend position. "We can ride all the way to the first deck," he said. Gelser grabbed the control lever and pulled it to the neutral position, causing the elevator to shudder to a halt among a squealing of brakes.
"If it was that simple, I would have done it already," she snapped, still angry that he had dismissed her objections so coldly. "I can't get us past the Proneos into the central Zella. Unless you have a neospheric link, you can't either. We will need to get off at the Trias and make our way to one of the crawl works for the Hellstorm autoloader. Once inside those, we can get to the external access hatches. There are inspection ladders from which we'll make the jump over to the main articulation block and then up into the Acropolis."
"You suggest that we clamber along the ammunition feed of a cannon so that we can climb outside onto the shoulder of the Titan, from which point we ascend to the carapace fortifications. That sounds very risky."
"As risky as being caught by heretics who will shoot us on sight."
Gelser thrust the ascender lever again, and the motor jolted into action. The converging fire from the traitors intensified the closer the battle group advanced towards the citadel, despite the growing casualties inflicted by the Omnisire's war engines. The Casus Belli took the lead, forming the tip of the ram that continued to hammer at Azkallak, punishing salvos from its weapons like the edge of a blade, slicing armor and flesh. Exarchus's calculations whirled to keep up with the flow of movement away from the path of the Imperator, as companies of tanks were reduced to smoldering puddles, and platoons of traitorous Skitarii were pulverized by shells from the main battery and Hellstorm cannon. The enemy did not confront the Casus Belli directly, but tried to slip away, parting like water before the bow of a ship to attack the smaller Titans advancing in the Imperator's wake. Chastened by his earlier failures and the remonstrations of the other command officers, Exarchus did not voice the doubts that continued to nag at his calculations. Questions regarding why the enemy did not bring their full force to bear against the Emperor-class Titan went unspoken, as did speculation regarding potential reasoning behind the traitor's earlier inexplicable maneuvers. Exarsus still could not adequately explain what had transpired since battle had been joined. The need to analyze was a tight fist around the remaining pulmonary vessels of his circulatory system. In frustration, Exarsus improvised an antithetical protocol system, divesting Vassalf of an entire swathe of processing ability and dedicating it to full-scale antirhythm functions. Their interlocked cogitational wavelengths flowed back and forth like a sea on a shore, the thoughts of the anti-Exarsus pushing back against the calculations and assumptions of the dominant Magos program, advancing and then retreating as one or the other led the race to extrapolate meaning out of the continual data input. Even so, Exarsus could make no headway and decided that full interactive protocol was required to totally encapsulate the dichotomy. We carved off the slave personality almost fully, granting it 95% autonomous reaction. Exarsus Primary.
Casus Belli, as a single unit, comprises the greatest threat to the security of the Citadel.
Exarsus Secondary.
Correct. The firepower sequentials of the Casus Belli are outmatched by the rest of the battlegroup taken as a whole, yet we present a single target with singular defensive capabilities.
Exarsus Primary.
We have 12 void shields protecting our weapons. The rest of the battlegroup has many more protecting theirs.
Exarsus Secondary.
Correct. The ability of the battlegroup can be degraded more swiftly by attacks on our companion engines, but as an effort-to-consequence ratio, elimination of the Casus Belli would have been more effective. The prime opportunity to destroy the Casus Belli occurred during the first moments of orbital attack. Had the enemy delayed longer so that the Citadel guns, anti-Titan super-heavy vehicles, and orbital lance strikes had all occurred concurrently, there is a 70.6% chance that the Casus Belli would have suffered critical, if not lethal, damage.
Exarsus Primary.
Probability that such potential was not known to the enemy?
Exarsus Secondary.
Functionally zero. All calculations are within parameters set by standard protocols. Indeed, the traitors are better placed to know the firepower quotients at their disposal, and even if they did not have access to battle records detailing the Casus Belli's particular defensive capabilities, they could estimate accurately from the earliest tank and infantry attacks.
Exarsus Primary.
Speculate.
Exarsus Secondary.
Insufficient parameters for speculation.
Exarsus Primary.
Cause for oversight of potential destruction of the Casus Belli.
Exarsus Secondary.
Deliberate strategy.
Exarsus Primary.
Focus calculation on determining potential enemy motivation within the parameters discussed.
Exarsus Secondary.
Affirmative.
They rumbled upwards without conversation. With nothing to distract her, Gelsa's thoughts returned to her predicament. Her hands started to tremble, causing the calipers of her exophalanges to click rapidly.
You weren't very convincing earlier, when you'd said you'd call off the hunt for me.
I will ensure your safety once I retrieve my sigil and contact the Scutari Dominus. Gelsa nervously tapped her metallic fingertips against the cage wall, until a scowl from the Inquisitor stopped her.
They say that an Inquisitor can kill a world, she said, far more cheerfully than she had intended.
Who are they?
Stories? Bunk chat. Is it true?
It is called Exterminatus, and yes, it is within the authority of an Inquisitor. Gelsa nodded. She felt on edge, bordering on frantic. She put her hand on the control lever, using it as an anchor, a connection to the real world when everything seemed so dreamlike. After a moment, Harkus laid his hand on the back of hers. There was blood under his fingernails, and his knuckles were swollen.
"Have you ever ordered Exterminatus?" she asked.
"Twice." She studied his face for a deeper reaction, but there was nothing there. She could read more emotion in the metallic features of a tech priest. He was so steady, so solid, that her giddiness subsided just by looking at him. It was reassuring in a way. If someone had the power to destroy a world, she wouldn't want them to be prone to excessive emotion.
They could not be saved,
Harkus continued. He took his hand away and folded his arms.
It was better that their corruption did not spread to other worlds.
That's why you'd prefer the Casus Belli to be destroyed rather than turned against the Imperium.
I see that you are starting to gain a better perspective.
Gelser realized she had lost count of the number of decks they had passed and looked at the numeral dial. They approached the Pentaz. Two more to go. They clanked past the Tesseraz in silence. Harkus reached past her and pulled a handle to the braking position, bringing them to a halt as the indicator dial reached the third numeral.
Are you ready?
He asked, his hand hovering over the manual door activation. Gelser nodded, even though she didn't feel ready at all. Staying in the elevator cage wasn't going to improve her situation. While the devolved persona started running its own simulations and data mining, Exassus returned his main focus to the ongoing battle, shunting across any relevant data as it arose. Counter-battery fire had reduced the thunder of the quake cannons to an erratic booming, and proximity to Az-Kalak prevented further attack from orbit. Like ants beneath the attention of one of his Skitari, streams of infantry fled through the ruins unmolested, as the Titans directed their ire against the main defences. The troops that remained posed little threat to the Imperator, but the opportunity to deploy the Skitari seemed obvious to Exassus. He made no such request, calculating a high probability of rebuttal and further unpleasant possibility of censure. The Casus Belli had reached the slope of the city outskirts, more accurately, the main cordon wall that encompassed the outer settlement. Ragged breaches in the thick ferrocrete barrier gave ingress to streaming lines of traitors on foot, but the gates were barred, leaving scores of tanks abandoned on the roadways leading to them. Engine detonations accompanied each of the Titan's steps as it advanced along the main highway, armored vehicles, like the shells of insects, crushed beneath a careless soldier's tread. Iolona.
Break the gates.
A spur of urgency from all three moderati betrayed their competitive rivalry as each attempted to bring their weapons to bear before the others. Exassus detected power level warnings throbbing through the noosphere from the reactor, but they were quickly erased by a command protocol from the Princeps Senioris, directing all available energy to weapons fire. It was Haley's plasma annihilator that discharged its rage first, targeting the western tower, a blocky, hexagonal fortification studded with heavy weapon ports. Three bright stars flashed into the building in rapid succession, and a trio of blast waves pulsed out, dispersing the atomized remains of the tower's structure. The gate sagged, but held for a few more seconds until the combined fire of Gevran's main battery, defense laser, and Acropolis gun towers shredded the reinforced metal with a blinding barrage. Razdia's annoyance flooded the noosphere, the target obliterated before his Hellstorm cannon had built up to firing speed. With a whine, audible even within the command module, the weapon powered down, its multiple barrels slowing to a stop. Razdia.
It's better to conserve the ammunition for more worthy targets.
Haley.
Yes, that was surely your considered decision, and not at all an excuse for your laggardly interface.
Iolona.
Show some decorum. These are the lives of the Omnisire's servants being taken. Though they have reneged upon their duties to him, their loss is not trivial.
It was indeed a sobering thought, and one that Exassus pondered as the Casus Belli strode through the smoke of the gate remains. To either side, the wall proved little obstacle to the warlords, whose fists and guns broke apart wide sections to allow them to pass, tumbling the broken pieces upon the bodies of the dead, as all the works of traitors would be toppled. Exassus, Direct Trans, Mondaras.
What lures one into the sphere of ignorance?
Mondaras.
Why does one turn away from the exploration of the Omnisire? It is to believe rather than to calculate, to revere faith alone over enlightened dedication.
Exassus.
One might muse upon the distractions of technotheological determinism, but I cannot encapsulate a theorem that would provide benefit outside the scope of the cult Metallica. Why would one choose voluntary exile into the darkness of the unenlightened?
Mondorus.
The transitory but addictive nature of short-term gain. The illusion of control outside the noospheric embrace of the great edifice of Mars Supreme. It is adolescent thinking to strive for independence, denying the interdependence of all the components of the Machina Cosma.
Exasus.
A self-applied delusion, then.
Mondorus.
Or external interference masquerading as revelation. Also, do not discount the possibility of unintended contact with corruptive noospheric sources or potential Xenos infiltration.
This caused a worry to shiver through Exasus's cognitive processes. Exasus.
It is not my field of expertise, so I am unaware of any precedent for wholly external corruption. Is it possible to become heretic unwillingly?
Mondorus.
It is not a dedicated field of study for me either. We stray into issues of definition. Is volition required for techno-heresy? If one strays under the lead of another, is one a heretic? Can the simply misinformed claim innocence of their transgressions? These answers are beyond Omegos Dominus and Logistarius to conclude.
Exasus.
While the beginnings of techno-heresy may perhaps be obscure, there can be no doubt regarding the loyalties of those that oppose us. The machine god is truth. The Omnissiah is the incarnation of truth. To oppose the servants of the Omnissiah, to slay them, is direct contravention of the truth. No doubt remains that once one raises arms against the truth, one has transgressed.
Exasus Secondary.
I have been monitoring this exchange, and I wish to clarify a matter. Please extrapolate on the nature of short-term benefit to the detriment of long-term objectives.
Mondorus.
Identify yourself fully.
Exasus Primary.
This is a cogitator partition I created to examine possible motivations for the enemy's inefficient behavior.
Mondorus.
Very well. I shall indulge the inquiry. The attainment of long-term objectives can be less appealing when inaccurately measured against short-term benefits for a course of action. One might disregard negative consequences based on false evaluations.
Exasus Secondary.
Elaborate on the basis of false evaluations.
Mondorus.
Overestimation of one's abilities, or underestimation of the obstacles ahead. Reliance on alliances not yet made. Weighting of oaths received, disproportionate to the ability of the oath-taker to fulfill them. All are forms of self-delusion that can misguide calculations. In short, belief against reason.
Exasus felt the secondary persona parse both of his neuro-components away from the noosphere, ending the dialogue with Mondorus. Exasus Secondary.
I have correlated this information with the actions of the traitors and propose a hypothesis. Let us reverse the logic. It is possible that the heretics wish to sacrifice the short-term gains of destroying the casus belli in return for a longer-term objective.
Exasus Primary.
That would require the sacrifice of Az-Kallak.
Exasus Secondary.
The Citadel's destruction has been a near absolute certainty from the moment the battle group arrived. Rather than prevent its loss, the enemy are attempting to turn the situation to some future advantage.
Viz purpose fulfilled, Exasus started to subsume the split persona, but asked a last question before wholly absorbing Viz data. Exasus Primary.
Why would the enemy wish to degrade the numbers of the battle group but not destroy an Imperator Titan?
Exasus Secondary.
Unknown.
The area of the down decks was just below the ante and temple gates of the tech priests, through which they could pass to and from the Acropolis. The smell of incense was heavy, drifting down through grates in the ceiling just above their heads. It was almost pitch black, given over almost entirely to the immense gearing and levers of the weapons mounts. Patches of ruddy light gleamed on lubricated metal, showing scattered glimpses of spinning axles and gears. The steady chugging of the autoloader belt feed made everything tremble. Somewhere nearby, but unseen, a tech priest chanted low ministrations to a faltering motor. Further up the Imperator's torso, the motion of its gait was more pronounced. Gelser walked along the deck without problem, compensating for the movement. Harkus had a harder time of it, swaying like an infant.
"You'll need to leave the robe," Gelser said.
She pointed to a series of handholds cut into the plasteel of a slanted stanchion. Just a few centimeters below the brace, a pair of gears creaked round as the moderatus of the Hellstorm cannon adjusted aim. A yellow light sparked into dim life above their heads.
"Cover your ears and open your mouth!"
Gelser obeyed her own instruction, as Harkus put his hands to the side of his head without question. The Hellstorm opened fire. Thunder resonated across the deck, filling the air with sound and flakes of rust. Even with her hands clasped tightly over her ears, Gelser felt the enormous pressure of the cannon's rapid pounding. It made her teeth ache and her gut tighten.
"One, Omnisire, two, Omnisire, three, Omnisire," she counted, blinking away the dust.
5 seconds the burst lasted, as long as a lifetime amid the deafening noise. The tumult stopped. The yellow warning light disappeared. Harkus mouthed something, but her ears were ringing too loudly to tell what he had said, and the light was too dim to read his lips. She pointed at her ear and shrugged. He shook his head and shucked off his robe. She thought he was naked at first, but his skin caught the light with a glossy sheen. He was tightly muscled, barely any fat on his body at all. As he moved, she saw pockets in the flesh, small bulges on his pectorals and abdomen concealing small pieces of gear, and a slender dagger sheathed into his thigh.
"Sin skin," he said,
his voice raised above the background throb of the autoloader. He gestured for her to approach and took her wrist, laying her hand on his arm. It felt cold and slightly plastic.
"Hit me."
"What?"
He pointed to his stomach.
"Hit me and see what happens."
Frowning, she complied, driving her fist into his gut. At the instant of impact, the secondary skin hardened. The force of the blow staggered him, but the synthetic skin protected him from any internal damage.
"The Hyperesia were hardly hurting you at all," she said.
"That is not quite true."
Harkus raised a finger to his swollen cheek and eye.
"But they did less harm than you thought."
"So you probably would have fought them off if I hadn't come along."
"I am glad that you did," he said. "They were instructed to kill me. Even if I had overcome them, I think I would have been apprehended again, as you warned."
Gelser collapsed the multi-tool and slid it into a sheath on her belt. She reached for a grip hole on the stanchion and pulled herself up to the first step. She looked back at the Inquisitor.
"That almost sounded like thanks."
"Thank you, Gelser Vinjaint."
He clasped his hands to his chest and nodded.
"So often those of us that struggle to protect the Imperium do so in the darkness, without fame or gratitude."
With Viz's repeated attempts to interpret the enemy's intentions failing, Exassus dedicated the majority of his attention back to the wider battle. V synchronized with the surveyor arrays of the Casus Belli to get a sense of the situation, while a sub-processing routine accumulated tertiary data flow from the newer spheric wash of the Moderati. Though it was far from the perfect interaction afforded by the MIU links, this approximation provided sufficient clarity for the Magos to construct artificial sense of the conflict. The greater part of the enemy army had been destroyed or routed, leaving the ruined streets between the Titans and the Citadel a near deserted rubble wasteland. With no concern given to the preservation of civilian life or structure, the Titans had enjoyed free rein with their weapons. Whole districts had been flattened, and across nearly half of the fortified city, barely a structure more than 2 stories high had survived. In places, Exassus detected collapse patterns more suggestive of demolition works than warfare. Correlating these positions to the database of the city's geography, they discovered that many of them had been of significance to the Imperial or Adeptus Mechanicus authorities. It was simple enough to surmise that the traitors had started deconstruction before the arrival of the Omnissiah's punitive forces. It seemed counterproductive to put resources into destruction rather than construction, particularly in the face of likely retribution for their rebellion. The majority of Azkallak had been under the jurisdiction of Adeptus Terror. Administratum Tithehouses and Adeptus Arbites had been knocked down, along with several Adeptus Ministorum shrines. Whether the rebels had intended to replace them with edifices of their own misguided cult would have to remain pure speculation. Other efforts to expunge the Imperial presence seemed less conclusive. Larger housing blocks and private estates had been raised, presumably due to the pro-Imperial leanings of their former occupants. It had been a far more calculating erasure than that being enacted by the Legio Metallica. The Titans pulverized the remnants of homes and storehouses beneath their tread, while their weapons unleashed laser and plasma against the buttress wall of the keep at the city's heart. The decision to conserve ammunition in favor of energy-based weaponry pleased Exarsus on the grounds of general resource management, but a few quick equations proved it was poor for immediate kill efficiency. Exarsus. Inquiry.
Are we expecting delay to resupply? I do not understand why we are not expending all available effort to the destruction of the enemy.
Mondorus. Data log packet. Registering the transmission time, Exarsus realized he had been distracted by the exchange with Viz's secondary persona when the Princeps Senioris had issued a revised mission objective. V unpacked the command. Iolona.
The enemy cannot be allowed any relent. When Azkallak has fallen, we shall push into the area immediately beyond, taking the wrath of the Omnissiah into the zone known as Azaphi Alessa. To ensure the enemy have no opportunity to stage a hardened defense or regroup, there will be no pause for resupply. The Skatari support column will detach to complete the pacification of Azkallak, and the battle group will proceed in isolation.
It was unorthodox, both in timing and nature, but the datalog confirmed that the order had been issued via the Princeps Senioris' MIU Nuospheric interface. Backtracking through the archive, Exarsus discovered a spike of intermoderati traffic prior to the announcement, but the details of their interactions were code-locked against examination. This was also unusual, but not without precedent. Exarsus tried not to interpret Viz's exclusion as a personal slight, but given that the communications had been sealed by Gevran's authority, it was not a possibility V could wholly discount. Further introspection was curtailed by a wave of surveyor alerts announcing the arrival of considerable traitor aerial assets. Deployed from deeper within the mountains, the flotilla comprised several high-altitude bomber aerostats and a large number of ground attack craft. Visual trackers locked on to the rising, whale-like bombers, while smaller, dart-shaped aircraft powered nearer, dangerously close to the ground to avoid surveyor detection until the last moment. Sonic warnings alerted the regular crew of the Titan, while the Nuospheric trilled to the alert of missile locks. Gevran's presence loomed large within the Nuosphere, and the Imperator's guns barked their retort. The defense laser, an armament capable of striking orbital starships, spat forth a ruby beam that instantaneously obliterated a strategic bomber. The blast left nothing but energy residue scorched across the sensor panels. Smaller gun turrets spat their fury at the incoming attack wings, filling the sky with shrapnel bursts and flickering las beams. The flare of rockets streamed in return, fanning out from the swooping attack craft. A few targeted the Casus Belli, their volleys exploding ineffectually against the massed banks of void shields. The majority were aimed at other engines of the battlegroup. The flare of overloading void shields surrounded the Woundwalker, a warhound that had been circling the left flank, and the central warlord, Indomitable Guardian, while long-range las cannon shots from other ground-attack aircraft scoured lightning welts across the energy defenses of Areva, the victorious Endeavour. The Imperator's anti-air batteries snarled in reply, guided by Gevran's will. Flak detonations stitched black clouds around the incoming squadrons, and rapid-firing autocannons laced the air with slashes of tracer rounds. The spiraling trails of damaged craft told of a handful of successes, but as the Imperator continued to forge up through the outskirts of the city, the survivors spiraled around the colossi of the machine god, their guns ablaze. Gelsa continued up with Harkus just behind her. The crude ladder took them above a massive conduit of plasteel hanging from the structure of the shoulder works. It shook constantly as the autoloader belt within carried shells the size of battle tanks up from the magazine store in the Casus Belli's midsection. Its course turned vertical as it passed into a sheath of articulated metal, inverting a level above them to meet the cannon mounting somewhere in the darkness of the shoulder mount. Glimpses of sunlight shone into the gloom as the building-sized weapon swung around, highlighting a profusion of meters-thick plasteel struts and artificial fiber bundles as broad as trees.
"We cannot scale that," said Harkus, looking up at the sheer surface ahead.
Fist-sized rivets held it together, but were too far apart to be of any use.
"We are not going to,"
Gelsa said, hooking her multi-tool into the lever lock of an inspection hatch. The square of metal hinged outwards, leaving a gap large enough for a person to enter. The belt was currently empty of shells, while the Princeps and Moderatus sought a target. The massive clasps were ideal as an improvised elevator, though they clattered past at hazardous speed. The Tributi and Inquisitor stood side by side at the opening, judging the moment to leap. Gelsa crouched, creating tension in the exostruts implanted into her legs. The fabric of her coverall bulged with hard lines. Harkus jumped, and she followed a heartbeat later, reaching for an empty shell bracket. Harkus landed with a shout and wrapped his arm around a jutting bracket. Gelsa thudded into the belt more heavily, knocking the air from her lungs. As she slipped down the corded fabric, she threw out a hand, seizing hold of a strut. Carried upwards, darkness swallowed them, and the din of their passage drummed within the confines of the belt canopy. Gelsa hauled herself alongside Harkus, teeth gritted, and then pushed ahead. She clambered onto one of the open bracket arms and grabbed the multi-tool, pressing a release catch so that it telescoped out to its full length. Gelsa held it out, the hooked blade for cleaning chain links pointed towards the side of the auto-feed. She turned, leaned against the corrugated belt, and thrust her other hand towards Harkus. She knew from the twin circles of paleness that he could see her far better than she could see him.
"Grab hold!"
The Inquisitor did as asked, gripping her wrist, her caliper-assisted fingers curling around his arm in return. Gelsa hauled him alongside her and looked up, straining her eyes for a telltale sliver of sunlight that marked the boundary point between the feed and the cannon housing.
"You know, if I miss this, we're going to get dragged into the firing breach and crushed to death."
"I trust you," said Harkus.
Three words that sang in Gelsa's ears. So shocked was she by this rare praise that she almost forgot to jump. At the last moment, just as the belt started to invert, she hurled herself outwards. The multi-tool clanged against the compartment wall, its sharpened claw piercing the sheet plasteel. One hand rigid around its haft, the other locked on Harkus, Gelsa thudded into the side, jarring her shoulder and banging her head against the metal. She looked up. A gleam of sunlight bounced from the passing shell brackets about a meter above the head of the multi-tool.
"Use me as a ladder," she said, "and then help me up."
With her back against the plasteel, she lifted Harkus as best she could and braced her foot so that her reinforced thigh formed a step. Harkus grabbed hold of the strut of her right shoulder through her coverall and pulled up with a grunt, his foot finding her thigh bar. She wrapped an arm around one of his legs, steadying him as he placed a foot on her other shoulder, reaching with both hands. He stood there for a second, silhouetted against the brightness, and then vanished. A heartbeat later, he reappeared, reaching down to Gelsa. She flexed her exoskeleton and hauled herself into his grasp. He pulled, holding her at the edge of the opening while she worked the multi-tool free. She swung a leg into the gap and half rolled out of the ammunition chute. Gelsa lay on the support girder for several seconds with her eyes closed, sucking in lungfuls of crisp air. Opening her eyes revealed the underside of the immense Acropolis and to the left the armored bulk of the Hellstorm cannon housing. She turned her head slightly and blue sky came into view. Cold air stung her eyes, and the wind caressed her face. She sat up and smiled. It was the first time in 2 years she had been outside. Chapter 5. The God Machine. From her position upon the flank of the Hellstorm Cannon, Gelsa had a panoramic view of the battle, but it lasted only moments. Even kneeling caused vertigo to spin through her, sending her back to her belly for several seconds. The crisp air was bitterly icy in her lungs, and the openness threatened to sweep her away like a mote on the wind that streamed across the Hellstorm Cannon mounting. She took a deep breath and closed her eyes, attempting to master the sensation. Instead of the startling emptiness, her senses instead focused on the alien movement. Though she was only a few meters from where she had spent most of her life, inside the down decks, the rolling sensation of the Imperator's gate was even more pronounced on the exterior. The Hellstorm swayed for several seconds after each movement, its ponderous pendular motion quite nauseating for the first few moments. When she looked again, Harkus was standing next to her, arms crossed as he surveyed the vista around them. Hesitantly, she gained her feet and joined him, the sharp edge of temporary agoraphobia blunted by his presence. The void shields that encased them distorted the view, like a heat shimmer edged with blue and grey. Gelsa had never been outside while the energy defences were operational. The air felt oddly heavy on her skin, the hairs on her arms tingling with static. There was a distinctive clinical smell on the breeze, reminding her of the ablutions down flues after a full cleansing. Her eyes were drawn to the fortified city around and ahead of the Cassus Belli. It was closer to an artificial mountain than a settlement, tier upon tier of armoured walls and towers rising out of the foothills. Dark thunderheads swathed the peaks beyond the fortress settlement, flashes of lightning in their depths. Anti-aircraft fire streamed into a bright spring sky, tracer rounds and the blossom of airbursts chasing squadrons of Imperial bombers across the dark blue. Missiles streaked groundwards in reply, their detonations carving fiery welts into the ferrocrete walls. The flash from concealed muzzles betrayed the presence of heavy guns in the central keep. Every few seconds, a blossom of fire and shrapnel splashed across the view, accompanied by a halo of purplish light as the void shields swallowed the detonation.
"Az-Kallak, it is called," said Harkus, shielding his eyes against the glare of twin suns. "It means the last defiance, although it merely holds the pass to the mountains. It might be the largest enemy stronghold, but it is not the last. It has to fall before any meaningful attack can be launched against the traitors taking shelter in the highlands."
Gelsa shuffled to the edge of the platform. She was used to crawling over the service ladders and maintenance gantries during reconsecration, but she had never been outside the Imperator while it was in motion. She looked down. Beneath them swayed the banner for the Hellstorm Cannon. More than 4 times her height, the standard was woven from red and gold, threaded with over 1,000 battle honours around the iron skull symbol of the Legio Metallica. The ground moved past with surprising speed, despite the ponderous nature of the mechanical giant's stride. An armoured torso that concealed the down decks stretched towards the ground, shadowed by the Imperator's acropolis. She followed the course of an immense foot, its huge toe splayed beneath a building-like greave, large enough to house half a company of soldiers. The foot threw up a cloud of dust as it settled on the hard dirt, sinking several meters into the ground. As effortlessly as if it were a living person, the Titan's weight shifted from one hip to the other, pushing it forward. Craters and burning war engines littered the outskirts of Az-Kallak. Levelled buildings and broken defence towers spilled their shattered blocks down the slopes. The ragged remains of streets were dotted with charred tank hulls by the score, many of them little more than slag heaps in the midst of glassy furrows, ripped by the Annihilator and the plasma weapons of other Titans. When dizziness threatened to topple her again, she turned her attention to the Titan structure, something closer and more tangible. To her left, the head jutted from the god decks. She wondered if a bridge crew member might look out of the closest eye-like canopy and see 2 figures on the cannon like ants crawling up a Skitari soldier's arc rifle. Beyond the mass of the upper torso, the plasma annihilator hung on the other mount, gleaming with the power of a trapped star. vapor coiled from dozens of vents, swathing the weapon in its own cloud. Past this mist, Gelsa saw other machines of the battle group advancing. Warhounds sped ahead, their megabolters and inferno cannons terrorizing the infantry companies fleeing back towards the citadel. A little closer advanced the warlord Titan. Gelsa recognized the banners of the Will of Iron. Though a majestic, towering destroyer of the machine god in its own right, the warlord was dwarfed by the Imperator. She could not see the other titans of the battle group, but knew there to be more. Nearly half the Legio Metallica's current strength had been deployed to Nicomedua, a demonstration that the Omnisire's power had not been eclipsed, even in such benighted times. Wheeled recon vehicles preceded the Casus Belli, partly to ensure adequate footing for the Behemoth, and partly to clear away small pockets of resistance that were not worth the attention of the main guns or secondary batteries. These, in turn, were only a vanguard for the hundreds of Skitarii tanks and walkers that followed in the wake of the Titan's advance, their mission to seize the ground once the enemy had been routed. The first support line that followed consisted of 2 dozen tall walkers of varying patterns and armaments, painted red and black, flying a profusion of kill banners and family flags. They were the Knights of House Raven, auxilia from the world of Colossi, whose alliance dated back to the distant conquests of the Great Crusade. At the center strode Lord Lusitas, in his heraldry-decked Knight Atropo, itself a relic of this ancient past. Upon his left and right advanced 2 Knights Warden, with immense back banners carrying the standard and trophy icons of the house. The bulk of the House Raven forces were Knights Paladin, split into battle squadrons among the Metallican Tech Guard. The slower but more heavily armed Knights Warden followed with the Skitarii, ion shields casting shimmering shadows from the accompanying tracked troop carriers. Gears, each a story high and more, ground into motion with a rumble of huge motors. The building-sized breach chamber swung left towards its next target. Looking along the length of the Hellstorm, each of its 6 barrels wide enough to drive a tank into, Gelsa saw a battery of defense turrets studding a curtain wall of Az-Kallak.
"It's going to open fire!"
she yelled, herding Harkus towards the grip rungs that ran up the side of the main housing behind them. The Inquisitor needed no encouragement, all but flying up the ladder in his haste. Gelsa came after him, a little more labored, fatigued by her efforts. They gained the top of the cannon's breech casing and dashed towards the rear, where a web of slender traverse lines gave access to the exterior of the Imperator's uppermost superstructure. Together they leapt onto the cabling and crawled spider-like to a small observation ledge right beneath the promontory of the Acropolis. The Hellstorm boomed into life as they scaled the last leg of their climb, the fire of its muzzles lighting the underside of the carapace, illuminating ferrocrete that looked more like the bedrock of a mountain than something that belonged on a war engine. Gasping as shockwaves pounded her against the Casus Belli's armored skin, Gelsa gritted her teeth, one hand hooked around the ratlines, and grabbed Harkus as he was flung bodily against her by the pressure waves from the Hellstorm's muzzle. He gripped her arm, and they hung together like a pair of spiders whose web had been caught in a gale. The bombing attack was timed alongside a renewed bombardment from the remaining Citadel guns, which laid down a blanket of detonations around the war machines. A flow of noospheric pressure agitated Exarsus as the shields of the Omnisire's temper failed and the Warlord Titan took hits directly against its armored hull. A pulse of secondary sensation coursed through the minds of all the noospherically linked when a carapace multi-launcher exploded, its remaining missiles tearing apart the mounting. Exarsus's articulated limbs twitched in empochronicity as more shells tore chunks of armored flesh from the Omnisire's engine of battle. The Casus Belli's defense laser stabbed out again, slicing through one of the remaining gun towers. A magazine filled with plasma warhead shells erupted like an artificial volcano, molten metal and ferrocrete flowing like lava down the sloped streets of the inner city. Attack craft circled, guns spitting rounds at the Titans trying to restore their void shields. No single bullet or lasbolt could pierce steel-like skin, but the continuing torrent of incoming fire was enough to overload a void shield as soon as it was brought back online. Exarsus was surprised when a third aspect to the ambush revealed itself. Sudden plasma fire erupted from infantry concealed within the rubble around the Will of Iron. Faced with this unexpected attack, the warlord was forced to back down, its energy output devoted to recovering its shields, its Gatling blaster only capable of laying down short bursts of suppressive fire, until the warrior Hammer of Nyziros moved up in support with its own salvo of plasma blasts. The aircraft quickly diverted from one end of the battlegroup to the other, while the high-altitude squadrons dropped their immense payloads. This time, there were no distinguishing targets. The Casus Belli, Laodonis Vanguard, Victorious Endeavour, and Omnisire's Temper were all caught in the conflagration, as incendiary bombs covered the whole right flank of the advance. Sinews that would have gritted Exarchus's teeth tightened, and a clawed appendage flexed with anxiety as slews of white-hot fire poured over the shields. Several collapsed in quick succession, as though the flames burned through layers of flesh. Overshots from the bombers detonated among the following Skitarii troop carriers and walkers, incinerating them in globular expansions of brightness. The directional ion shields of accompanying night squadrons flashed while bursts of cruel flame scoured along the line of walkers. The slick of fire seemed to crawl onwards, flowing like a swarm of burning wasps as it consumed more of the battlegroup's support. Mondorus.
That is Phosphex. Where did the traitors discover such a stockpile? Inventory logs show no such weapons on Nicomedua.
Gevrin.
Many vaults once lost to the warp have been rediscovered since the awakening of the Great Rift. Forge worlds forgotten to history have reemerged. A few thousand tons of Phosphex warheads are probably the least of the weapons unearthed from the ancient past.
Exarchus.
It is now incontrovertible that the enemy are attempting to isolate the Casus Belli. Continual targeting of the battlegroup and support elements shows that the traitors wish to separate us from our companions. I strongly recommend that the Princeps Senioris revisits her earlier revision of the battlegroup's orders in light of this.
There was no reply from Iolona, and Exarchus was forced to surmise that she was too intently involved with the battle to spare a thought for Viz's suggestion. It was Gevrin that responded instead. His transmission was curt, interspersed with fragments of orders to the gunnery positions as they continued to target the swirling aircraft squadrons overhead. Among the chatter, Exarchus detected an outwave of a longer-ranged broadcast from the Moderatus Prime, but was unable to trace its destination. Gevrin.
We have more pressing concerns, Zhao.
Data packet. The scanner log thrust into Exarchus's consciousness revealed a second wave of aircraft coming from the Citadel itself, their course taking them directly towards the Casus Belli. An inferno raged around Gelsa and Harkus as they clambered ever upwards. Curtains of white and blue flame rained around them, kept at bay only by the flaring void shields and the ministrations of the Deleuze within the downdecks. Dim shapes flitted beyond the conflagration as smaller aircraft strafed around the Casus Belli. Gelsa imagined the incinerating heat washing over them, but the void shields kept out even the tiniest hint of warmth.
"Praise the Machine God for the artifices that deliver us from death," she declared,
helping Harkus to swing over to another narrow ledge and one last set of ladders. This brought them up to the flank of the Acropolis, to the crenellated edge of the outer fighting platform. They came upon a maintenance access door just below the revetment, a hatch about a meter in diameter. Gelsa rested against the red-painted ferrocrete while Harkus tried the handle. It did not open.
"I see no lock," he said, straining at the metal bar.
"It might just be rusted a little,"
she said, motioning for him to let her have a look. She grasped the handle and turned, using all the force of her exoskeleton. With a shriek, the handle came away, shearing at the point of contact with the door.
"Apologies, mighty Casus Belli,"
Gelsa said quickly, laying a comforting hand on the wall beside the hatch.
"In error, I have sought by force that which I should have asked permission to do. I will make amends."
She touched the broken handle to her brow cog and stowed it in a pouch at her belt. She examined the door again, hoping that perhaps the handle coming away had exposed the mechanism. But it was not so.
"It's no use. We won't be getting in this way."
Harkus took something out of one of his skin pockets. Sunlight caught on a flash of metal as he cast his arm up. A thread-slender line snaked out of his hand after it and hung down the wall as whatever he had thrown attached somewhere over the battlement. Gelsa looked dubiously at the wisp of a line.
"It comes from a Catachan funnel thread spider," said the Inquisitor. "The Catachan regiments use it to weave anti-blast vests. Believe me, if you were strong enough, you could pick up a battle tank with it."
"And at the top?"
Gelsa looked up, but could not see what had attached to the ferrocrete.
"Microadhesive suspenser," Harkus said, "similar to the mag grips used in the boots of space marines."
He grabbed the thread in both hands and put a foot against the surface of the Acropolis foundations.
"What other fancy things have you got hidden away?"
"All manner."
Muscles taut, Harkus started climbing, walking up the wall.
"Just in case."
Gelsa found it more difficult, her exocalipers affecting the fine motor coordination of her fingers, so that it was hard to keep a grip on the thread. She had to reach up and wrap it around her hand, pull herself after Harkus, and then unwind the line from her other hand. It was time-consuming, and the Inquisitor waited for her beneath the line of the Acropolis battlement. Gelsa was happy to stretch across and hang by her fingers from the stone-like material, easing into a gap in the crenellations to check there was nobody around. The expanse of the carapace was a courtyard in front of the gates and towers of the main Acropolis, inside which were located secondary batteries, a volcano cannon, the astropathic tower, and anti-aircraft weapons. Barracks for Mor Skatari and the temples of the tech priests took up the rest of the high castle. Several high-arched gates and a profusion of windows and smaller doorways broke the buttressed walls and soaring towers. Scrying servitors linked to auger systems peered down, gargoyle-like, from beneath the turrets and upper ramparts, scanning with dead eyes. Harkus moved to pull himself over the lip of the wall, but Gelsa thrust out a hand to stop him. He dangled 30 meters above the ground.
"Remember, I said I would get you this far, and then we're finished," Gelsa said.
"I remember."
Harkus looked at her hand on his chest, and then at her, one eyebrow raised in challenge. She withdrew her hand with a look of apology.
"Once we are inside the Acropolis," he said, "you can find a place in which to lie low, and I will track down the Moderatus Prime to locate my sigil."
"Agreed."
A klaxon sounded just as they were about to clamber onto the courtyard, and in response, the main gate of the Acropolis heaved open, spilling incense and Skatari into the open. Gelsa froze, her heart hammering as squads of warriors fanned out, faces hidden behind breather masks. They wore segmented armor beneath coats and robes of metallica white and carried an assortment of rifles and pistols. With them came tech priests, some humanoid, some scuttling on tentacle limbs, or floating across the ferrocrete on personal suspensor fields. Electricity sparking along their naked limbs, fulgurite priests moved with the throng of warriors, their voices raised in crackling prayers to the machine god. Last to arrive was a creature that stood twice as tall as the Skatari, propelled into the open on 4 piston-like legs. Pierced stacks jutting from its robed back spewed scented exhaust fumes. 2 large cannons flanked an armored torso. Above them, a pair of mechanical arms that ended in a variety of drills, graspers, and connection plugs. Its insect-like face swept left and right on an articulated neck, surveying the scene, multifaceted eyes glinting in the sunlight and the glare of energy cells.
"That is the Magos Dominus!" exclaimed Harkus. "Jausanus Exasus, the Bellicosus Majoris!"
"He's the one you said was loyal, that you were going to speak to."
Gelsa smiled, scarcely believing their good fortune.
"He's right there. Go on."
"I cannot,"
replied Harkus. He pursed his lips in frustration.
"As you pointed out earlier, I have no evidence of the conspiracy. My only hope is to invoke my inquisitorial authority, and for that I will need to present my sigil as proof of my position."
Gelsa frowned, not quite sure she understood the objection. Before she could voice her opinion on the matter, Harkus continued.
"Also, I believe the Dominus may have other concerns at present."
He pointed past Gelsa. She turned her head. Angular shapes rapidly approached against the clouds of smoke that billowed up from the firebombing. As they swept closer, Gelsa could make out dragon-like bodies with mechanical wings, creatures that were a disturbing mix of organic and artificial. She was no stranger to the more bizarre artifices of the cult Metallica, but the eyes of these beasts burned with an otherworldly glimmer and left unnatural vortices in their wake. She fancied she heard vicious screeches, though it was likely impossible over the noise of the Imperator's progress and her own hammering pulse. With them came a sight even more alarming. Gunships of archaic design, painted in a bright livery of pink and black, decorated in garish stripes and patterns.
"Space Marines of the Traitor Legions," whispered Harkus. "A boarding attack!"
Enclosed within the armored layers of his warskin, Exassus Tactical turned wide-spectrum lenses towards the incoming assault craft. He could not codify a single pattern among them. Each had been heavily modified. The half-mechanical creatures that accompanied them defied any sort of analysis, and his weapons appendages oscillated slightly at the thought of warp corruption. His mind raced with specific data streams, analyzing the likely landing sites and attack stratagems the enemy would employ. As the warskin encased his material form, so the Exassus tactical persona shielded his thoughts against the anxieties of strategic calculation. The Magos Dominus fixated on his immediate mission, to repel the incoming attack. Through the billow of cleansing incense that spilled from the open gateway of the Acropolis, the Skitarii Corps raced to their positions, their alphas directing them to the best firing points to meet the incoming flyers. A handful of battle priests spurted streams of binaric to one another as they helped muster the defense. But Exassus Tactical voiced his orders through every medium equally, addressing his troopers via audible sound waves, even as his thoughts pressed into the minds of his newer spherically cogent companions.
"Now is the plan of the enemy revealed. While the guns of the traitors seek to fell our companion engines, the enemy think they can gouge out the insides of Casa's belly with this attack. We will meet them head-on and repulse the landing."
As V spoke, the Magos Dominus readied the weapons protruding from the clavicular mounts of the warskin. His twin Serpenta grunted into life, followed by the crack of the first phosphor rounds entering their firing chambers. Using dorsal manipulators, V fed the belt feed from a thoracic ammunition cavity into the mounted macro stubber. A power field gleamed blue against his serrated plates as Exassus Tactical activated the relays of the long blades that jutted from his abdominal plates. Above, more squads mounted their weapons on the ramparts of the defensive galleries, heavy culverins and arquebuses directed towards the enemy. Guided by the will of Gevran in the command module below them, the anti-aircraft batteries blazed, surrounding the oncoming craft with fire and smoke. One of the Alphas suborned the new aspheric connection. Alpha Hakreda.
"Counter-air fire is ineffective, Dominus. The blasts are not penetrating the armor of the gunships. Submit that the Moderatus Prime concentrates anti-armor weapons instead."
Exassus Tactical passed on the request, sliding back into the newer sphere for Gevran's attention. A quick assessment demonstrated that any change in the fire patterns was not likely to have a significant effect before the enemy were able to deploy their troops, if the Moderatus Prime even considered the suggestion.
"Stand by to repel boarding parties. Direct coordinated salvos and then retreat. They will attempt to use frag launchers and landing jets to clear the ramparts."
The white-coated squads lining the outer wall raised their weapons, awaiting the command from their alphas. Sparks flared along the wings of the incoming gunships, and the drake-like monstrosities accompanying them opened their fanged jaws, revealing whirling energies within their gullets. Arcane lightning spat from the mouths of the half-mechanical beasts as rockets seared from the gunships towards the waiting Skitarii. Sorcerous blasts shrieked across the armor of the tech guard, cooking their flesh. Even as the warp blasts sighed through them, the Skitarii remained stoically at their positions, their resolve bolstered by the imperatives Exassus projected across the noosphere. Point defense guns opened fire, quad-mounted heavy stubbers that blazed thousands of rounds at the incoming attack. Black detonations marked the sky as they intercepted a handful of rockets. The detonations of those that passed through the fusillade erupted along the wall, tearing apart Exas's tactical warriors with a storm of shrapnel and razor-sharp metal fragments. Exas's tactical impelled the survivors with the attack imperative. They blazed with arc rifles, radium carbines, and plasma calibers in ongoing volleys of multicolored fury. The dragon engines screeched and veered away, driven back by the weight of fire. But the blocky gunships plowed through, even as plasma blasts and scintillating beams scoured across their hulls and canopies. Scanning the gunships with a variety of visual and other sensors, Exas's tactical detected several patterns of bolter weapons and other anti-personnel armaments. They would be in range of the Imperator's Acropolis in a few seconds. "Fall back!" With a verbal command, Exas's tactical broadcast the withdrawal order. The Alphas responded instantly, each a tactical vector that disseminated the Magos Dominus's needs into their squads. As a wave of white, the Scutari turned and ran. Just a second later, the gunships raked fire across the parapet where the defenders had been. A few Scutari that had been slowed by flesh wounds were caught in the onslaught. Bolts detonated inside their bodies, hurling out chunks of flesh, broken cybernetics, and tatters of white fabric. Gelser stifled a cry as yet another gunship circled overhead, spilling armored warriors onto the upper parapets. The reek of charred flesh carried on the wind, rank in her nostrils as the acrid smoke of the warp flame stung her eyes. The bark of weapons turrets had lessened, the gunners overcome as more traitor legionaries made breaches into the Acropolis. The Magos Dominus led a counterattack, scything down the power-armored renegades with a volley of phosphor fire. The Scutari concentrated the pulses of their arc rifles against the superhuman troopers, driving them back from the main gates.
"This is our only chance," said Harkus.
He hauled himself through the crenellations and rolled down to the courtyard. Gelser found herself alone, holding onto the rampart, while gunships and warp dragons blazed with shells and rockets around her. It must have been barely a minute since the first attack wave had screamed down onto the Acropolis, but it felt like hours, so intense was the experience. Panting, she pulled herself after Harkus, dropping down to the ferrocrete flags beside him. Explosions hurled chunks of the Acropolis wall across the open space, a plume of dust billowing over Scutari and Space Marines alike. The Inquisitor dashed into the miasma, and Gelser chased his half-seen outline, illuminated by an occasional flash of light as a bolt round sparked past or a radium blast slashed through the smog. Others also retreated, many of them wounded or helping those that had been, their withdrawal covered by a constant pulse of weapons fire from squads positioned at the gates and firing ports on the upper levels. Anonymous among the wave of soldiers pressing back through the main portal, Gelser and Harkus slipped into the Acropolis.
"Ready your ground," commanded Exas's tactical.
V delineated a defensive line across the vision of Viscutari, while the Alphas re-established their squad connections and assimilated the survivors of formations whose tech priests and Alphas had been slain. Like a self-repair diagnostic, the Magos Dominus's host reorganized itself into the positions decreed, while Exas's tactical calibrated Viz's heavy weapons and aimed at the closest gunship. Plasma jets flared as the craft burned off speed, slewing sideways to allow fuselage-mounted weaponry to rip fresh volleys against the upper towers of the Acropolis. Rapid-firing autocannons coughed shell after shell into the carapace fortification, while the transports peeled away behind the tempest of fire. Two dipped towards the rampart, their prows opening like the maws of monstrous raptors. Four more banked into the upper levels, spewing a stream of gaudily armored space marines. The bright flare of jump packs flashed across Exas's tactical's visual sensors, slowing the descent of the heretic Astartes as they plunged towards the Acropolis. The impulsed fresh commands to the platoon guarding the gunnery areas, sending them to the gateways and firing ports to unleash a hail of phosphor rounds and radium beams. The two assault craft at the level of the Magos touched down just inside the parapet. Even as the billowing heat wash and dust of their landing flowed over the defenders, more gene-enhanced warriors charged down their assault ramps. Among the roar of bolters came the discordant whine of sonic weapons building to lethal harmonies.
"Eliminate!"
The simple command leapt from Exas's tactical's cogitation to the assembled Skatari. A wall of fire crashed across the rampart to meet the onrushing traitor space marines. Exas's tactical opened fire along with his soldiers, spewing a long burst from the phosphor blasters and a fusillade of large-caliber bullets. Jets snarling, the gunships rose again, freeing their weapons to provide support fire for their disgorged cargo. Traitors with brightly patterned armor wielding the archaic sonic weapons strode to the fore, strumming and triggering their armaments. Artificial squeals and rising shrieks carved erratic vortices through the smog of battle, and where these disharmonic emissions passed over a Skatari, they tore apart armor, stripped flesh to the bone, and pulverized organs. Caught in overlapping sound waves, the flayed corpses seemed to dance in death, until their skeletons shattered into thousands of deadly shards. More conventional bolt rounds accompanied the sonic onslaught, the flicker of propellant dimmed by the smoke, almost lost among the actinic flare of arc rifles. Exas's tactical.
Close quarters counterattack.
The noospheric signal connected to the cadre of tech priests dedicated to short-range assaults. Electro-priests leapt forward from the ranks of the Skatari to meet the first warriors of the attacking force. Fulgurite devotees lashed with their electrified staves, their bodies flaring with energy discharges as the space marines swung chainswords and knives in return. Arcs of power leapt from the thoracic generators of the Corpuscari, their whole bodies lighting like active circuits as they hurled blasts of raw electricity into the heretic Astartes. Exas's tactical joined the counteroffensive even as we transmitted the withdrawal order to the Skatari platoons. Having discharged their prepared volleys, the Tech Guard were best employed defending the portals of the Acropolis itself, rather than becoming entangled in a sprawling melee for which they were not suited. A space marine that Exas's tactical identified as a squad leader charged at the Magos Dominus with a power axe upraised. Exas's tactical expended a small portion of energy to fuel his arc repulsor, a device of his own invention completed to confirm his elevation to the rank of Magos. The arc repulsor belched forth a wave of bluish force that flowed towards the traitor sergeant. At the moment of contact, the diffused energy wave contracted, imploding upon itself to deliver a hammer blow impact that threw the space marine back, chest plastron and abdominal armor shattered open. Exas's tactical stalked forward and stood over the fallen foe to drive his powered blade into the sergeant's exposed midriff, parting secondary heart and all three lungs with a single blow. His heavy weapons rasped fresh volleys into the squad that leapt forward to avenge their leader, muzzle flare and phosphor lighting them like crazed lumen globes. Even the Fulgurites and Corpuscari could not hope to overcome several dozen space marines, but their sacrifice earned the rest of the force sufficient time to retreat to the Acropolis. Exas's tactical decapitated another heretic Astartes that thought V would be unprepared for a flank attack, not comprehending that the Magos Dominus had perfect 360-degree awareness and response. Propelled backwards by long legs, weapons spitting rounds at the pursuing enemy, Exas's tactical retreated into the main fortification. A single noospheric pulse brought the gates crashing down, sealing the portal. Seconds later, the first hiss of melter cutters and the clang of power fists signaled the Space Marines' attempts to breach. Chapter 6. Repel Borders. Inside, air filtration systems snarled in protest at the debris choking their fans. Alphas shouted, and tech priests moved among their soldiers, issuing bursts of harsh binaric while they replenished ammunition and distributed new weapons. A huge shape loomed through the main portal, the wavering shadow becoming the Dominus, surrounded by a platoon of Skatari and the crackling forms of a few surviving electro-priests. The doors boomed shut behind them, and the crash of locking bars echoed dully through the interior of the Carapace Citadel. As Gelser might strip off her coverall, the Skatari commander shed Viz battle form, the quadruped war machine peeling apart to disgorge a human-sized mechanical caterpillar. On a score of many-jointed limbs, Magos Exasus sped into the Acropolis, followed by a coterie of tech priests. A powerful detonation shook the gate while squads of Skitari took up positions to defend the hallway just within. From inside the Acropolis, somewhere above them, gunfire and panicked shouts echoed down the corridors. A tortured screaming continued, every pain-racked screech a fresh scratch on Gelsa's frayed nerves. A hand around Gelsa's arm led her down one of the passageways. The walls of the Acropolis were decorated with carved friezes of scenes from Metallica, vistas of temple factories and holy laboratories that Gelsa had never seen. She let her fingers trace the contours of a spired Manu sanctuary, the tiny shapes of dozens of heavy battle tanks issuing from its arched gateways, a cog-like halo of the Omnisire above the Citadel shrine. Harkus moved some distance ahead and waited at a junction for her. She pushed away from the wall, but dizziness threatened to topple her, and she slumped back against the sculpted alabaster. She made no attempt to resist as Harkus came back to guide her to a secluded alcove beside a low doorway into one of the secondary gunnery chambers. The steady thud, thud, thud of a defensive cannon sounded through the wall. She leaned back, placing her head against the plastic divide, finding comfort in the predictable rhythm of the gunfire. Harkus headed back to the main hall and reappeared a few seconds later, dragging a dead Skitari soldier. He took off the armor, weapons, and coat for himself. The Inquisitor was talking to her, but all she could hear was the rush of blood in her ears. She looked up, trying to focus on the blue light of a lumen globe behind a mesh in the ceiling. Her vision swam, bleeding into swirls and then straightening again.
"Focus on me!"
Harkus's voice penetrated the noise of her pulse, but his face seemed to swim in a fog. He became more insistent, his grip tightening on the back of her hand, fingers pressing between the metal calipers.
"Gelsa, focus on me!"
Her heart was a drum in her chest, each beat like thunder. In her gut, something writhed, constricting about her intestines, worming its way into her lungs to steal her breath.
"Gelsa!"
The word was sharp, not loud, pricking the bubble of numbness that enveloped her. The tributi forced herself to look at him through the sick feeling rising in her chest. His voice remained muted, his face sketched in drab colors.
"Your body is going into shock. You have to stay calm."
I...
More words spilled out, but Gelsa did not recognize what she said. Cooler air swept into the corridor, clearing some of the odor of sweat, lubricant, and cloying incense that was the signature smell of the tech priests. Almost immediately, Gelsa's vision sharpened, and she was able to stagger a few steps before she had to slump against a plasteel brace. She slid down until she sat with her back against the wall. Gelsa stared at her hands, willing the bright metal to come into focus against the dark skin.
"I'm sorry," she muttered. "Sorry. So sorry."
"You cannot be held responsible for biology," said Harkus.
He stepped back, checking the corridor. Gelsa was dimly aware of feet on the hard floor, lots of running. A nagging sound of impacts trembled from the gate chamber. Harkus crouched beside her, his gleaming eyes staring directly into hers, almost blinding with their intensity. The Inquisitor reached inside his robe and then pressed his hand to her neck. She felt a scratch, short but painful, and pulled away.
"What did you just do?"
she demanded. He held up a microdermic between thumb and forefinger.
"A stim, that is all. To keep you going."
Shedding his war skin, Exassus shifted his perspective back to a strategic mode. The Magus Dominus inhaled a deep draught from his incense circulators to cleanse the taint of the outside air from his systems, and his calculation patterns extended into a more nebulous realm, collating data from across the whole Neosphere to construct a neuroschematic of the battle for the Acropolis. Although V could comprehend the full extent of the conflict, his data flow lacked the precision and clarity of his tactical self. In particular, V was in no position to directly coordinate and respond with Viscitari. The local defense of the Imperator was entrusted to the lower-ranking battle priests and alphas, while Exassus concentrated on the matters of broader import. Locating three points of attack in the upper levels of the atrium, Exassus examined the progress of the Space Marines across the layout of the Acropolis. Accounting for their ignorance of the Imperator's specific arrangement of chambers and passages, we adjusted this simulation and determined a likely convergence point for the trio of invading forces. The intersection appeared in this data thread as a glowing white room close to the floor of the atrium where the Acropolis met with the command module access and the Deluzman decks of the main mechanical systems. As we manipulated this internal display, Exassus navigated the actual corridors, passing along frieze-lined passageways and heavy lintled archways beyond which the gun crews continued their labors alongside the slave servitors. We moved away from the fighting. Bereft of his warskin, we had no intention of contact with the enemy, instead racing for the atrium to best organize the defense around the enemy's ultimate objective. Like the Az-Kallak defenders, we knew we could not prevent these foes from pushing through to their objective. Their bodies had been genetically engineered for close-quarters fighting, and the war gear designed to enhance those already considerable abilities by no lesser creator than the Omnissiah. Such Skitari squads and tech priests that Exassus directed into their path were intended as a brake on the speed of their advance, rather than with any hope of halting it. Where possible, they might degrade the Space Marine's threat potential through the process of inflicting accumulating damage, and more likely, requiring enemy ammunition to be expended in their destruction. Racing serpent-like down a spiral stair near the rear of the Acropolis, Exassus examined the attacker's potential goals. We began with a general conjecture of inflicting casualties and disrupting the guns of the Casus Belli, but dismissed it on the grounds that, like the earlier attacks, if that had been the desire, then the enemy should have launched the assault to conjoin with other offensives. Having eliminated this broad possibility, V was left with the thought that if the Space Marine attack was not general, it had to be specific. There had to be something significant about an aerial insertion into the Acropolis at that particular time. While V tried to unsplice the competing motivations that crowded into his thoughts, Exassus sent a full mobilization command to the rest of the Skitari company, ordering the Alphas to arm their squads as a preparatory measure for defensive fighting inside the atrium. We then issued a summon muster imperative for the atrium itself, setting into motion a series of commands that would have the Skitari in the Acropolis and those in the leg bastions conjoined at the point of greatest defense. To facilitate the more rapid passage of those within the leg bastions, Exassus sub-ordered a request into the conveyor systems of the main torso levels, equipping his alphas with an override to commandeer all elevators and conveyors in order to speed them to the atrium. We reached the atrium 3 levels from its base. It was in rough outline an inverted ziggurat, with 4 stairways running around the walls in a helical arrangement, interspersed with access arches and intermedial galleries. A delve into the atrium cartographical data highlighted 2 possible objectives for the Space Marines: the command module and a direct access linkway to the reactor decks. Penetration of either would prove fatal to the Casus Belli. Gelser stood up and reeled away, disgusted by what Harkus had done, flailing a hand at his face when he attempted to grab her.
"You don't do that!"
she snarled, stumbling into the opposite wall. The giddiness dissipated, but her heart raced and her skin itched. A surge of energy swelled through her muscles, pushing out the aching tiredness. But something was wrong. She couldn't catch her breath. Her fingers and toes burned and her jaw hurt.
"What was it?"
she demanded.
"A standard-issue Skitari stimulant mix," Harkus replied.
The Inquisitor's voice sounded tinny and distant. He tossed the microdermic away and pulled a pistol from his commandeered armor.
"I took it off one of the bodies. Nothing unusual."
Sweat sheened Gelsa's skin and soaked her coveralls, running in rivulets down her back.
"I already have additives in my blood," she gasped.
Hormonal surges frothed inside her veins, making her want to shout and run and pound her fists into Harkus.
"For my exoskeleton, I'm suffering an alchemical reaction. I'm burning up."
A loud crash and renewed flurry of gunfire from further into the Acropolis made Gelser flinch. Pulses of lasfire and radium blasts flashed against the walls from unseen combatants. The light was too bright, the faintest noises reverberating through her skull. her body strained against her will, demanding to move, to be set free, as if it might burst out of her skin with a life of its own. The contact points where her exoskeleton delved into flesh and connected to bone throbbed painfully. An explosion at the far end of the corridor tossed a handful of Skitarii corpses into view, wreathed in flame, robes tattered, their blood spattering the passageway. The shadow of a giant appeared against the wall, cast by dancing firelight. Gelsa was running before she even knew what she was doing, the multi-tool as light as air in her hand. She barely heard Harkus's shout, much less understood the words. All she knew was that she had to act. The fire that burned in her chest would consume her if she did not release its energy. She leapt over the steaming corpses of the Skitarii, skidding through puddles of blood into the next passageway. The floor was hard and reassuring under her bare feet, the endlessly recycled air a taste of her home, even tainted as it was by the odor of the tech priests. Her thoughts were a blur, racing from one subject to the next, never staying in one place, a welter of animistic impressions and instinct, nothing rational or considered. Ahead, a power-armored figure stalked the corridor, its back turned to Gelsa. The tributi was usually the tallest in any company she kept, but the space marine was larger still, his augmented bulk further swollen by corruptive power. His warplate was much adulterated, fixed with curved ornamental blades, and a pair of horns spiraled from his helm. It was a dark pink with tiger-like black stripes, hung with charms and fetishes made out of human and Xenos parts. Gelsa could not focus on the runes daubed across the massive shoulder guards. The space marine started to turn, the muzzle of the bolter in his grip fashioned in the shape of a snarling dog. Spurred by the unnatural chemicals coursing through her blood vessels, Gelsa hurled herself at the monstrous warrior, swinging the multi-tool at the side of his head. The plasteel connected hard, the thud of the impact rebounding from the walls. Vibrations thrummed through her fingers, weakening her grip, so that the multi-tool tumbled from her grasp, even as she collided with the warrior's armored body. Staggering back, she looked up and saw that what she had taken for a helm was in fact the traitor's head, curling horns included. His face was pale but heavily tattooed with red and green, so that he had the appearance of a creature made of some strange fire. A scratch leaked a single droplet of blood where she had struck. Gelsa snatched up the plasteel tool and hit the space marine again, aiming for the chin. A slight movement of his head meant the warrior caught the blow on his cheek with as much effect as her first attack. The space marine smiled, displaying teeth filed to razor points, each studded with a black gemstone. Gelsa screamed and swung the multi-tool again and again, battering at the warrior's face and head. For several seconds he made no effort to defend himself, his chest rumbling with a deep laugh, while she raised welts from his inhuman flesh. And then he moved his arm, faster than Gelsa could follow. Pain flared through her body, and her back hit a wall, the multi-tool spinning from her grip again. The legionary took a step towards her, his dark tongue licking flecks of blood from swollen lips.
"I am going to enjoy breaking you," he declared, his words softly spoken, his tone complimentary and engaging. "The tech priests have built your body nice and strong, so it will take some time. That is good. It is the endurance of your spirit that I truly wish to test. We can share the ecstasy of that time. I will let you hurt me, too, if you want."
Clattering down the white-painted steps, Exasus detected the first Skitarii squads emerging from the interstitial decks of the torso. Others arrived from within the Acropolis, the leading squads of space marines close behind. An intense firefight screamed into life above the Magos as they alighted upon the floor of the atrium and looked up. Through the eyes of his soldiers and his own sensory arrays, they picked out a combat squad of heretic Astartes, five warriors on the brink of entering the atrium's upper level. Channeling data flow across the Nuosphere from other battle priests stationed around the Acropolis, he was able to devise a holding pattern of squads to limit the support from other attacking forces. While the Skitari moved into position to close in on the Space Marines from several directions, Exassus sent two more muster commands. The first went to the auxilia tasked with close defense of the Acropolis. If Exassus and Viscitari were the Casus Belli's innate immune system, the auxilia would be considered the adaptive immune system, instigated after the wars against the Orcs on Armageddon. They were not integrated into the Nuosphere, nor Exassus's strategic systems, instead relying upon their natural warrior instincts and personal initiative, as guided by their officer corps. As a second layer of protection against invasion of the Imperator, they had proved effective on several previous occasions, and Exassus's victory estimates were therefore significantly higher once they were deployed. The second corps reactivated was another standard precautionary measure. The order passed to the tech priests of the small Cybernetica cohort that usually lay dormant within the sublayers of the Acropolis. Whether their arrival could be expedited to influence the outcome of the unfolding conflict was uncertain, and Exassus refused to add any positive bias to Viz's victory thresholds on their account. Despite Exassus's complimentary maneuvers, a number of the heretic Astartes had moved into attack position around the uppermost level of the atrium. With a declining victory estimate coloring Viz's mood, Exassus registered the increasing casualty levels of the Skitari attempting to prevent the Space Marines gaining access to the main chamber. The losses were too many to sustain. With a sensation not unlike a pang of regret, Exassus transmitted a further withdrawal code, essentially abandoning the upper levels of the Acropolis to the invaders. If he had miscalculated the intent of the traitors, a 4.6% probability to Viz's mind, he had just given them free rein to unleash carnage on the gunnery stations. Several torturous seconds passed, during which the Skitari regrouped within the atrium, resetting their cordon lines and sighting their heaviest weapons to cover the upper entrances. Arcs of fire and trajectory lines crisscrossed Exassus's view as we regarded the highest level, every white-coated warrior lining the stairs and galleries picked out with a tiny red rune that identified squad and platoon. A rapid noospheric roll call counted the losses at some third of the total Skitari force available to Ver, though more were arriving as the bastion chambers emptied of soldiers. Though relief was a strange response to imminent enemy attack, it was the closest emotional equivalent to Exassus's reaction when the heretic Astartes launched their assault on the atrium. In four coordinated attacks, they stormed along the corridors leading to the highest level from each direction, intent upon breaking into the broad hall. The probability of direct contact and concomitant personal risk increased to nearly 90%. Any momentary considerations of self-preservation were subsumed into a swell of satisfaction that Viz's predictions had been proven correct. A flare of red scored a line across the Space Marine's nose and brow. Gelsa remembered Harkus's digi-laser. Another flashing beam seared paint from a gauntlet raised to protect the warrior's face. The bark of the Space Marine's bolter was ridiculously loud in the confines of the Acropolis passageway, and Gelsa shrieked. All she saw was a flicker of propellant, and then she heard a pained shout from Harkus. She struggled to her feet, stimulant chemicals still coursing through her, overriding any fear. Gelsa threw a punch, her reinforced knuckles connecting with the giant's chin, her full weight behind the blow. The metal of her calipers buckled, and the Space Marine rocked back a step. Pain flared in her arm, and her first thought was that she had shattered her wrist. The Space Marine's eyelids fluttered, and he pursed his lips, sighing his pleasure. With a crash, a vent cover in the ceiling fell on top of the traitor, its corner gouging a bloodied furrow across the side of the Space Marine's head. A wiry figure followed it, wrapping his legs about the warrior's neck, a glowing knife in one hand and a stub pistol in the other. The Space Marine staggered as a second attacker dropped through the opening and the first opened fire, a bullet punching into the monstrous warrior's eyeball. The Space Marine roared, the pain no longer welcome. An armored hand closed about the arm of the first attacker, who let out a shout of pain and dropped his pistol. He started to saw at the Space Marine's wrist with his blade. Gelsa pushed herself towards the multi-tool as blood sprayed, the second assailant straddling a pauldron as she rammed a broad-bladed knife repeatedly into the Space Marine's throat. Like a felled tree, the traitor legionary toppled, twisting as he fell. The killers sprang away to avoid being crushed beneath the weight of warplate, landing deftly as the Space Marine crashed to the floor. They set upon the giant, firing several more shots directly into the eyes and mouth, to be sure. Gelsa recovered her improvised weapon, the claw head thick with clotted Space Marine blood. The bout of violence had purged much of the stim from her body, but she still felt on edge. She took a moment to take a better look at her saviors. By their size, she had thought they were adolescents, but now that she looked at them properly, she saw that they were simply adults who were short and lean, much like Harkus. They were both pale-skinned, with spiderweb tattoos across the left side of their virtually bloodless faces. They wore tight-fitting dark grey trousers and short-sleeved shirts of the same colour, their exposed arms covered in more black inkwork. Each had the Metallica silver cog implanted as a badge on the back of their shaven heads.
"The Xenarchia," she breathed. "You're vent fighters from Armageddon."
"The name's Darzi," said the woman.
She flicked her bloody knife towards the other.
"This is my choice-kin, Azad."
"I'm so happy to see you,"
said Gelsa, and then with a gasp remembered the Space Marine firing his bolter. Harkus was sprawled at the junction, and panic made her heart skip. Dashing to where he lay, she knelt down beside the Inquisitor, searching for any injury. The left side of his body, from ribs to hip, was discolored, reddened and bruised, but the skin was miraculously unbroken. The inside of his left arm was similarly marked where the blast of the bolt round had caught it. She hesitantly touched a hand to the injury. Harkus groaned. Gelsa let out a choked cry of relief and sat back, light-headed from stress and stim. The Inquisitor pushed himself up with a wince and leaned on one arm.
"The Sinskin is also a ballistic defense," he said, looking down at where the bolt had hit him. "Though I feel like I've been trampled by a Grox."
"Praise the Omnisire for the gift of his artifice," said Gelsa, touching fingers to her cog rune. "In his eternal knowledge are we shrouded from harm."
She helped Harkus to his feet, noting a few scratches on his face, the blood bright red against his light brown skin. The zip of lasfire and deeper bark of bolters resonated through the passageway still, injecting fresh urgency into Gelsa's thoughts.
"Who are they?"
asked the Inquisitor, looking past her to the vent runners.
"Xenarchia, they're auxiliaries from Armageddon, Darzi and Azad."
His blank look betrayed his ignorance, and she continued as they walked towards the newcomers.
"You sneaked aboard the Casus Belli, and you don't even know about the vent rats. They fought on Armageddon against the Orcs, downhivers, used to living in darkness and cramped spaces. The Legio recruited several hundred of them to help defend the Imperators."
"We need to go,"
said Azad, jabbing a thumb over his shoulder.
"There's breaches all over the Acropolis. You're safe now."
"Wait,"
called Gelsa, picking up her multi-tool as she approached the Space Marine's corpse.
"We need to get down to the Holy Decks. It's really important."
Darzi grimaced, displaying grimy, uneven teeth.
"We have to fight," she said. "If the Acropolis falls, we are all dead."
Gelsa darted a pointed look at her companion.
"I don't think I can lie low, can I?" she said. "And how are you going to get through the Acropolis with a battle going on?"
Harkus looked at the duct fighters with narrowed eyes.
"Could you get me to the command module without being seen?"
he asked.
"Why would you want such a thing?" asked Azad.
"Of course we can," said Darzi.
The two Armageddon natives glared at each other. A rapid series of explosions rocked the Acropolis from within, showering them with dust from the open vent. Azad cocked his head to one side and held up a hand to stop the others from talking. Gunfire ran along the passage and echoed within the vent above.
"I think we are going to the same place. That was at the Ante."
"The traitors are trying to break into the Holy Decks," said Gelsa, motioning to Harkus. "We have to help stop them."
His look conveyed his opinion that they didn't have to do anything, but he waved a hand towards the Armageddon fighters as though giving permission.
"You are a big one for sure,"
said Azad, sizing up Gelsa.
No vent running for you. We'll need to take the stairs.
Answering to Exarchus's summons, the Magos Dominus's warskin arrived at the lowest level of the atrium from one of the nearby archways. With everything set in motion to contest the entrance to the lower decks, there was nothing else left for Exarchus to do. His cogitations were far better exercised in more direct intervention. The spider-like secondary body peeled open, combat blades and heavy weapons splaying to allow ingress, as the battle augmentation awaited its controller. Exarchus coiled about herself as V entered the central void. Armored plates slid into position, even as cerebral connectors and motive detectors pierced the sockets that studded V's smaller form. The Magos felt the increased mass like a blessing of the machine god upon V's soul, spiritually as well as physically elevated as the warskin straightened its four legs. Even as the hardened carapace enveloped V's form, Exarchus Tactical's more militant, aggressive codeware took command of V's mental functions. Gone were hypothesis and introspection, two traits that ran directly counter to decisive combat action. In their place, Exarchus Tactical streamed empathy algorithms and spread killware into the Nuosphere to connect with the remaining battle priests and alphas. Exarchus Tactical fractured, becoming dozens of individual fighters and unit leaders, while defensive protocol measures moved the warskin towards the foe, ranged weapons spewing a torrent of devastating fire. On the uppermost level, Exarchus Tactical rode in the senses of an alpha leading a counterattack against Heretic Astartes, a phase rod gleaming in his hand. He ducked beneath a snarling chainsword and thrust the phase rod into his foe's huge plastron, the weapon's serrated tip shifting through the armor as if it didn't exist. A pulse of power ripped apart the Space Marine's chest cavity, pulverizing the organs within.